Welcome to the Mythic Life Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Brummett, and I am so excited to be joined by a very, very dear friend of mine, Perry Chase. How would the best way to introduce my dearest good friend? Oh my gosh, I have known you for so long now.
I mean, it's like almost 25 years, right?
It's coming up on it. Yeah. We met in New York at
a full moon ceremony.
A full moon ceremony that was at
the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors.
Yeah, COSM, when they used to have their place in the city.
Well, what's so funny is that that version of me would never have gone to a full moon ceremony, but I just happened to go to this thing.
Yeah. What inspired that?
I don't know. I think back to this time because, you know, for your audience, you know, I was a headhunter on Wall Street at the time. And I don't know whether I had had a breakup around that time, but I mean, I was definitely obviously looking for something, right? I was obviously not fulfilled, or like I knew something was not right, you know, in the sense that like the direction of my life was, and it still took years, right, for me to unwind that. But I don't know what led me there, but I was so glad that I met you.
Absolutely. You know, I remember at that point in my practice, I was always looking for events and places to really connect with and gather with people and really kind of be in that place of service. And, you know, every so often these connections come in that were so meant, you know, it's like looking back through our relationship, our souls really have known each other for a long time.
Oh, absolutely.
And we really were meant to come in and to play in this life, to explore. And, you know, through the different chapters of our life that we've gone through over the last 23 some odd years, like, it's been awesome to watch, you know, us discover ourselves. And today, we really wanted to get into this. We really wanted to explore this sense of, like, this topic of purpose and what is fulfilling. And, you know, that's a big thing here with Mythic Life is, what is a mythic life, right? Like, it's this soul-led life.
Yeah.
That we do have a consciousness that is more than just our body. It's this larger field. And we come in with this consciousness into our life and then have to, like, then remember it and let it open. You know, there's so much out there too talking about purpose. Like, when you think of this as a topic, like, what comes up for you? What is purpose to you?
Well, it's interesting because I think that we live in a world, a very ego-driven world, obviously, and a very accomplishment success. Who am I going to be, right, world? Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's very interesting because on my path, there was a point where purpose was so, I felt so lost in the sense of purpose. And I was like obsessed with it. And I was obsessed with it because so much was transitioning. And I associated purpose with what I do. Right. So like it was like, what is my job? What is my career? What is like, what is my doing productivity in the world? And I went to a retreat with my teacher. And before the retreat, I remember being hurt, like, I need to work on my purpose. My startup is ending. I need to figure out what is my purpose? What is my purpose? She was like, okay, just come. We'll work on your purpose. And I'll never forget because in that, like, it was a very deep experience. And it ultimately ended up being a message that was so simple. And it was like, my only purpose is to live with an open heart.
Hmm.
And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like the mental part of me was like, that cannot be it. That cannot be it. And what I felt was like, you know, I felt my size. And so what I always kept trying to do was I kept trying to find a place that could hold my size. You know what I mean? Like that I could come out and like be all of me and that I wouldn't be like people would not try to make me smaller. And so that was the struggle all the time was how do I take this whole thing out? You know, I always talk about it as like, I want to drive the Lamborghini that's in my garage. And I always thought that it was an external purpose. But I think that, you know, ultimately that's the discovery that led me down the path I'm on now. And I would say that following the internal purpose has created the external conditions for me to do just that.
And I think, you know, for the audience, like, this is something that always is so difficult to really discover, is what is the sense of authentic purpose versus the prescribed life, you know, and those layers of the ego.
Well, and spiritual ego. We should talk about spiritual ego, because spirituality is popular now, right? And it's like people want to like put layers, like they want to be healers, or like they want to do these things because they want to be a good person, or they want to do it because, you know, they want to achieve something in the healing space.
Yeah.
Do you see that?
It is a big thing when we do this exercise in some classes called divine timing. It's like a term in Theta Healing of what is my divine timing, my purposes. And there's always this huge concept like, I'm going to teach this class of 500 people and have this huge practice and center and change the world. You know, it's
I'm going to help all these people. I'm going to save all these people.
When what could be so fulfilling is actually not what you do, but how you become. How do you enjoy that place of becoming?
It's not always enjoyable.
It isn't always that enjoyable. It's true.
But I think this is like,
but it could be more meaningful. Like, how do I want to be as a father? You know, how do I want to experience that sense of relationship versus like this outside ego of a career title? And does that make sense?
I mean, well, first of all, I think fatherhood is one of the greatest examples of masculine service that there is. And, you know, I think this topic, right, like of masculine service, I think is fundamental to being in relationship with purpose. Because ultimately, to really be in soul-led purpose, your mind and ego must be in service to your soul and the soul's unfolding of who the soul wants you to become, not who you want to be. So I think that it's almost like unbecoming. Like, how is the path that you're on the unbecoming of you so that you can live your purpose? I mean, that's been my experience. In the sense that, like, I was just telling Eric before we started recording, like, how much of my path, the person that I am, right, like the Perry version of me, has been so resistant to all of this stuff. You know, like the first time aliens came out of my mouth, I was like, no, right? You know, like, I can't talk about this, right? And these ideas, I mean, even in, you know, for your listeners, like, I, you know, I teach pussy stroking. Like, my whole lineage is pussy. And it's all built on the energetics and relationship with pussy energy. And, you know, it's the core of my work. And for a long time, I was really, really, really trying to figure out how to teach feminine spirituality without pussy, because I was like, I think we can do this without pussy. Like, I can do this without teaching pussy. And that was, because it was like a personal preference. I was like, I didn't want to. And it told me too bad. Like, I am a lineage holder of that.
Yeah.
And I am meant to bring it to the world. And that is my ancient multi-lifetime, obviously multi, like thousands of lifetimes, like all of this work that has been accumulated. That's my purpose, not what Perry wants.
And that art of listening, like, we're always learning to listen in different ways. What's your journey of listening? Like, how do you really attune to what that soul intention is?
Resistantly. No, I mean, I think over time, I have the gift of being able to feel truth. And that is a gift because it is like being able to feel that harmonic. And I want to explain to people very quickly like what I mean, because truth is not about facts. It's not about stories or content. It's actually like truth has like a harmonic to it. It's a frequency. Mm. It's like the thread of the eternal that runs through everything that's an illusion. And it runs through everything, but then there's always like layers on top of it that like seclude it. And I've actually, if I really track back, I've had a relationship with this energy for a very, very long time. And I can track points in my life where it initiated me way before, you know, like when I was a child, when I was a teenager and I almost committed suicide. Like, I mean, like there've been a number of times that I've been initiated by this energy. And when it's been very powerful and it's like shown me, like I can even remember this time in college, I was in theater school and I was sitting in the back of the room in my favorite class, which was voice and speech, like where we did all the A, E, A, O, U, like all that. I just loved this class. And it was almost like I was in the room and then it was like the whole room and I was like moved back to the back of the room. Like I had moved like into observer position and it was like, you're done. I literally walked out of the class, picked up a payphone because I'm old, and I picked up a payphone and I called my dad and I was like, Dad, I'm just done. And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm done with theater school. And I was at Tisch, right? So Tisch is no joke. So everybody in Tisch was like, why don't you just take an academic semester? Like, don't quit Tisch. Like, people don't quit Tisch, you know? And I was just, I think I knew you at this time. I don't, maybe it was a little before I met you, but I was just so clear that that voice was like, no, we're complete with this chapter. And I had no rationale for it. I just did it and I listened. So I've always had a little bit of that, but I think that there's also a stubbornness of my personality that I've also had to experience, like trying to do it my way and meeting dead ends and not listening, right? And then life sending louder messages. Like I always tell this, the example of this is like, you know, can you listen at the level of a whisper? Can you listen at the level of the whisper? Or like, or do you need a tap on the shoulder? Do you need a brick through the window? And if you don't listen to that, you need a Mack truck. And I would say that on my health journey, I needed the Mack truck.
Yeah.
Maybe not like the Mack truck, but, you know, moving into a house full of mold, right, was a Mack truck moment for me in listening to like something was not right. And I wasn't figuring it out. And I was just trying to manage it.
Yeah, I recently went through that this past year of really having to decide about my health and relationship with food and relationship with substances. Like, it's a lot to hear the whispers and then to like, go, okay, I'll do something about it next month. I'm not ready for it yet.
Yeah.
And it takes courage to listen, and then it takes bravery to really take action from listening.
But I think it's also depends on the path, right? Like, so I think there are some, you know, I think about this in terms of energetic inertia, and I don't know if you think about it this way, but like, I think about it in, you know, also for your audience, you know, I went through one of the holes that I crawled out of was relationships. Eric, you've known me a long time and seen many disasters. But I'm finally, you know, happily married. But there was a time where it felt like the relationships that I was in just kept getting worse and worse. Mm. And I was in a relationship where, I mean, someone threatened to kill me and like, you know, I won't get into like all the details. But that wasn't actually enough for me to potentially leave. Like I was still like trying to ignore that. And obviously when you ignore messages that are that loud, you know, that's where you have so much inertia in a particular direction, like it's taking you to a bottom. But I did realize at some point that I was like, you know, if I don't change this, I can see the inertia of where I'm going. And if I don't change this, I'm going to end up with someone who might actually kill me. And I think that's the same thing with like substances or like not taking care of oneself or like avoidance or like things like this. Where it gets like, if you don't listen now, you can see the train wreck ahead of you. I think that some people actually want the train wreck.
Yeah. Circling back to that place of ego, sometimes we do want the big story, you know, we want the intensity of it.
Do you think it's a story or do you think it's that they want annihilation? The total like getting taken out?
Well, I think
like that level of cannot surrender and they need that much force to surrender.
I think that we do have free will and that our soul does have an override button on our free will.
Yeah.
We have our unconscious programs where we're not really embodied and connected in. And then we have our consciousness that's always trying to figure it out. And like we're halfway listening sometimes and then we're listening. And through all these belief systems and through our consciousness trying to figure it out, our soul's still trying to get to it.
Totally. Yeah.
So if we're not listening, it's going to bring it through shadows. It's going to bring it through those other places that can be these really destructive places, but is still working it through.
What I've found about that too is that like, and in teaching others, I look at all of those kinds of addictions now as energy that wants to be of service, that isn't being properly, like it's creation energy basically. And if you're not utilizing it towards creation and service, then you are consuming it because you need to park it somewhere. And so you put it into these like consumptive things. And that's been my experience of it. It's like eating itself.
Yeah.
Right. All this energy wants to come through and there's like too much of it, but you don't know what to do with it. I think this is why people are so desperate for purpose, actually. Right. Like, where do I put all of this? Where can I put it? And I don't think our world is set up, like our society is not set up for people to have good avenues for service.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about like going to the soup kitchen. I'm talking about like service in serving the energy, not your ego. Like living as an act of service.
I'm just really in process with that. You know, I've been looking at, I have this open house and intro to Theta coming up here next month and really wanting to explore this topic of purpose and this place of service. And I think it's also like discovering the authentic, to bring it back to that, because it's like the masculine versus that feminine of kind of more becoming and having more personal development as a purpose.
Yeah.
So often people go to that more, I'm going to create something purpose again.
I think you're right. And actually, I'm in this inquiry right now myself, because I really was staying away from certifications for a long time because I found them to be very patriarchal. And I was like, I don't want to serve this patriarchal idea of authorization, right? External authorization. However, I mean, my practice, my lineage is, you know, I have an 8 going on 9 year body of work now. And I realize that there are people who really want to carry the lineage forward. And I was like, okay, I need to create a pathway for that. But the conversation is, and this is something you might even bring to people with Theta, because it's like, do you want to serve the Theta lineage? Or do you want to use the Theta lineage for yourself? For your self-significance, right? And so this is like, for me anyway, I'm looking for people who want to serve my lineage, not just me, not the energy of the lineage, right? The energy of what the teachings are and like what they bring to the world. And it's not about being secondary to it. It's about becoming the person that the energy has initiated you to be in the holding and serving of a lineage. And I think this is where we've lost things in our culture, is that we've gone to this usage and consumption of the feminine, the energy, right? And you can look at this in terms of the planet and resources. There's this extractive nature that serves the ego or the collective consciousness, right? And it's not actually, it's not in service to the energy or life itself. And like, this is where we're broken. And so I see a lot of people like pursue things. And it's like, because they want to be something, because they want a certification that gives them credibility, or they want something that is going to save them or give them money or like,
yeah,
give them some meaning. And it's like, how about you let that thing that you are attracted to carve you into the person that you're meant to be without putting all of these goals and expectations onto it?
Yeah. Is that also the shadow?
Well,
that consumption, that like endless consumption of the feminine is kind of that, because it's empty. It's like, it's bottomless.
It is. But I also, I think it's just that. So to me, it's like the cycle is backwards, right? There's a way in our culture where we have made it so that like the feminine serves the masculine. And that is not what it's meant to be. The masculine is meant to serve the opening, and then the opening nourishes the masculine. What we've created is a one-way consumptive cycle where the masculine is consuming the feminine, and the feminine like dies and is depleted. And then the cycle needs to be cut where the feminine can find a way to regenerate. And you could just look at this in terms of like women in the workforce and the way that feminism has like created gender equality from the perspective of, let's say, like, you know, women working in the workforce.
Yeah.
But women have very different energetic systems than men. And so, like, for instance, like I worked in corporate forever and it nearly killed me. Women are not designed to work that way. We are cyclical beings and require rest and nourishment. And like, you know, it, we are not linear rockets to explosion, right? And like, you know, and so what's happened is like, you know, feminism, look, feminism is fantastic in the sense that like it has given women so much in terms of, you know, all of the societal pieces in the world. But feminism was not representing the feminine, energetic. And what we have created is a very masculine world where the feminine is consumed and depleted. And so in order to write that, right?
Yeah.
You need to switch tracks, and then everyone gets fed, right? It's like regenerative farming. Using something so basic that people can understand. It's like, if you keep farming the soil and you don't put anything in and you monocrop and beat the shit out of it in order to get as mass production as possible, how's your land going to look eventually?
Yeah.
It's going to be a desert.
And what's the consciousness of that food?
You know. Well, sure. But, and so you can think about it from the perspective of like, this is the culture of consumption. And so women have learned to allow themselves to be consumed. Women have learned how to consume their own life force in order to hit masculine egoic goals, right? That's like the grinding, hustling mentality.
Yeah.
Right? Look at the state of men right now. Men are depressed and lonely and dead. And like the state of men in the world right now is sad. And like a lot of women still hate men. But the thing is, it's like, you can't hate men. You just got to get the cycle right. Like when everyone's in right relationship, and I'm sorry for those, like, you know, where I'm being very binary here. That's me. So I apologize if I'm not including everyone, but the masculine, feminine energetics are what they are.
Yeah.
This is not about individuals. Does this make sense?
It really does. It's such a big topic because like bringing it back to this sense of purpose and like this exploration of purpose, I think that sense of embodiment, you brought up how it is popular now to explore spirituality and metaphysics and like spiritual growth. But I know so many people and they just like, they feel like they're having a spiritual experience because they're just every weekend going to an ayahuasca ceremony. And it's not about spirituality, not living in ceremony, you know?
Well, and it's not into, they're not integrating it. Right. So for me, feminine spirituality, which is really what I teach, embodied spirituality, is not about exiting and having peak experiences, right? It's about opening the vessel and expanding the nervous system to a place where you can actually integrate the soul and the being. There are some famous teachers in the world who have taught this before, right? Like this is a message that's been trying to come for a long time. But like, we are meant to be human. We are not meant to be like off in the ethers, you know, because people will talk about like these peak experiences and understanding oneness. And I'm like, great. Do you understand oneness in your body?
Yeah. To bring it from those intense moments into.
Well, and integrate it.
Our daily. Yeah. That totally. Integration. That really is what true spirituality is when it can be integrated through and brought into an embodied state.
And also without escaping or fixing. See, this is the thing. Like what I see is a culture of escapism and fixing. And listen, I have my own story about this. Can I tell the neurofeedback story?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I had this experience recently because on my health journey over the last year, I've had this incredible experience with mold in my house. And I'm sorry, that sounds really weird to be like, I had this incredible experience with mold in my house. But listen, it was the most profound teacher that I've had in a really long time. And Eric knows me for a long time because I would always come to him and I was traditionally a little bit of a hypochondriac. Like I was always like scared of stuff that was going on in my body. And funny enough, it was like a few years ago, like right before I started this, I was having a session with you. Do you remember? When I was like, what is happening with my body? And you were like, your higher self doesn't want you to know. And I was like, what? And you like told me that I was supposed to figure it out. Yeah. Well, this is the puzzle, right? This is the puzzle that I've been working on for many years. And it took me having the house, which was like an external project that I knew immediately was a reflection of what I needed to work on in my body. And I learned so much by working on the project of the house and like combing through it layer by layer and order of operations. And like, we have to fix this before we can fix this. And like, we have to do it slowly and patiently. It took me over a year to remediate my house. And then we moved back in and there were like a couple of more problems. And there was a point in which I was like, oh my God, I'm just fucking done with this. But I had to finish it. And in fact, just yesterday, we found the last thing that was problematic. Mm. And in working with my house, I have also healed my body.
Wow.
Yeah, right. So it was like this entire process. But on this healing of my body, I also kind of went down this rabbit hole of like, let me make sure that I am addressing all the things. Like, so I had an old head injury, you know, and some of this mold stuff. I was like, let me go to neurofeedback. Somebody recommended it. So I went for a brain mapping. They do my brain mapping. They tell me all this stuff that's wrong with my brain. And one of the things, interestingly enough, was he was like, your theta is too high. And I was like, that sounds not true. And he's like, no. He's like, trust me. And he's like, I've been doing this for 30 years. No one has ever asked to have their brain trained back. And I was like, okay. I'm like thinking that this is going to make me more focused or whatever. And he's like, you have no beta. And I was like, well, I'm a spiritual teacher. So, you know, I don't really have a lot of chattery thoughts, you know, like, and he, so I had like no beta and I had a ton of theta. And so anyway, we go and we train my brain and we're training my theta down. And my brain took to it very quickly. So I was able to train my theta down from like 23 to like 8 in 3 sessions. And then I went and I got on a call for work and I couldn't channel. I couldn't feel the field. And it was like I was wearing a helmet and like I was trying to like do my thing. And I was like, where the fuck is the field? Like it felt like I was wearing a metal helmet and my brain was working so hard. And I like literally stopped the call and like I was on with like 150 people. I stopped the call. I called them. I was like, you need to train my brain back right now. And I went back and we trained it back up and like I was fine. But what it really taught me was that who we have become is perfect. You know, and this is something I think that this desire to fix, right? Because this is tying this back in. Like, why do people pursue all of these things and these ceremonies over and over and over again? It's that we have this punishing ego that says, I need to be perfect. I need to fix everything. Everything needs to be better. I need to keep chasing. And what I learned in this was so powerful. And it was like, no, my brain is exactly the way it's supposed to be for the job that I am here to do.
Yeah.
I am the design that my soul intended.
You know, it's so awesome that you're speaking about this. It's something in Theta Healing that we look at with purpose is that to get to purpose, we go through life experiences to cultivate character.
Totally.
And that character creates the skill to be able to perform the ability that it does have a bit of a formula to it. Like you build a strength and yet that strength had to come from somewhere. Something had to test us and push us to become strong in that way.
Well, I always talk about this too, in the sense that like, you know, being adopted, right? I had like catastrophic loss as like the opener to my life. And that's always been with me.
Yeah.
But I think it's actually by design because it has an enormous amount of medicine in it. And it's like, it's baked in. Like you need that. I know that's terrible to say, but there are certain spiritual paths where you must have catastrophic loss. You must have it.
And these are the elements, our soul. Like we created some of this before we even came into this life. And then it continues to come through.
People don't like to hear that one. And it's like, I think there's a certain level of hearing that people need to have to hear that. But, you know, what I say to people like who feel sometimes a little triggered by that. Like, I did not agree to that trauma. And it's like, no, the person that you are, like the human being and the mind and the ego and the personality certainly did not consent. Well, that's not, did not consent, but like on some level, you know, the law of consent is that we consented to all of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we consented to all of this in order to learn, right? And I think that's an important, it's such an important anchoring of knowing that law, particularly when the world is fucking insane. And people are like, why is there so much evil in the world? And like, what I want to say to people who are asking themselves that question is because the light is increasing in the world and you can't increase the light without increasing the evil. It's literally like a matter of balance.
And it was always there. It was just more asleep. You know, everything's kind of waking up more.
Totally. But it was like, you know, I think there's a law in Kabbalah, actually. You know, if a soul with a lot of light is born, a soul with a lot of darkness is born at the same time.
Holding balance.
Yeah. Like that you have to have that balance. And that's a law of duality. Like it's a law of this realm. And this is also, I think, interesting because I think this ties into purpose too, where so many people want to save the world. So many people will have this idea of utopia and like that we don't have any of these things. And I always say to people, I'm like, that is not part of the agreement. There's this way where like this utopian fantasy that people have, and then they align their purposes to this because they're like, I want to save the world. And I'll be honest, something just came in for me to do, like to bring into the world. I'm not going to talk about it yet, but it's like, let's just say it's related to peace, which is so like, I am not a peace activist. Like, I'm not an activist in general. And like, the fact that this has come through is very confronting to me. And it's peace oriented. And it's not that I'm war oriented either. It's just that like, I've never been one to pursue utopia. I have a lot of approval for all the aspects of humanity in a way. But what I think what's happening is that I'm being guided towards this direction of creating more connection within humanity. Like, we have gone insane. We have lost our embodiment. And by losing our embodiment as a culture, the whole collective egregor of Wetiko takes hold and people become infected with this collective mind virus. And then it shapes humanity. And that is not what we are supposed to be doing. I believe we are a little bit off path. And at the same time, yes, it's all perfect because we are learning that we are off path, but we are off path. Like, what is the purpose of humanity? And, you know, like when I feel all these like synthetic things that are coming through that are encouraging disembodiment.
I think that is really so big because like in moving upstate, I started to realize like slowing down and finding enjoyment and not trying to find outsourced satisfaction all the time. You know, like I actually enjoy growing my food more. I actually enjoy doing things that are kind of harder work and like being able to be more enriched in that and be embodied in that and get to like crafting and not have to like think of everything being ordered on Amazon and, you know.
But that serves your opening. And even as a man, right? Like that serves your opening, which then allows more source to come through you. Which then allows you to create, but by moving up there, you actually created a really nourishing cycle for yourself, like where you are becoming self-nourished.
Yeah.
Right. You're not just consuming every piece of energy that opens for you. You're learning to like create a whole cycle.
Yeah.
I lack that land part, you know, I'm not a good gardener, but I did just start working on some elephant food that I like landscaped my front and I want them to grow a certain way. And I was out there working on my elephant food the other day.
Ah, that's so beautiful.
But I love that you grow your own food. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it changes my relationship with my theta work.
Totally.
I'm not teaching people to garden. I'm in session working on healing them and working on beliefs, working on emotions and supporting them of discovering their connection to source and to, you know, their soul, their higher self. But like when I feed myself in my life with having to be more self-sufficient, it does bring me into that place of service and embodiment to be able to open up that channel better. And I definitely agree that, you know, as a culture of purpose, humanity is definitely needing a correction of something.
Yeah. Well, because, and I think, you know, this also, I think this speaks to something too, which I want to make sure I clarify this nuance for your audience, because, you know, on one hand, people are going to hear me say you don't need to fix anything, but you do need to bring it back into alignment if it's out. And so like the difference between fixing, meaning something is wrong, versus like when something is out of alignment. So like I would say, and again, like, look, humanity is on a path towards destruction. Like if I had to look at like the inertia of humanity right now, it's like a train going at like full speed and there's like a cliff. And like the way that humanity is choosing to awaken right now is by driving that train off the cliff and having a huge explosion at the bottom, which leaves a ton of wreckage, but it will leave an awakening. So it's like, if you think about our souls or like the soul of, you know, like everything, it does not care how we do it.
Yeah.
It just cares that we awaken. It is our free will to determine whether or not we need massive destruction or whether we want to choose to awaken and open and kind of climb the ladder back up. And as, you know, a practitioner of the feminine, like the feminine is like, go through the bottom. But I will tell you that I mean, I have a huge system, and the bottom for me, I don't think is accessible without death, like actual death. And so every path I've come to, there's always been a death door.
Yeah.
And it's like, look, there's the bottom. Now you better choose. If you want to stay here, you better figure out how to climb back up.
Absolutely. That's that Mack truck.
Right. And it's like, are you willing to die in your ego, right? It's learning how to die so you don't have to die.
Yeah.
What needs to change? What needs to let go? Humanity is at that moment. Like, we are at the peak of that moment. And people keep choosing psychosis. And this is not topical, by the way. I'm not picking a particular topic. I'm just saying, like, in general, the thread that is continuously happening for like the last 5 years is that people continue to choose psychosis as opposed to awakening.
Through that, is that also a death of ego?
It's a death of collective ego, which is even harder, right? The death of the collective ego has to happen with enough individual awakenings. And so I've basically looked at everything going on in the world right now and for the last 5 years. And I basically said to myself, I am doing actually exactly the only thing that matters in the path that I'm, you know, like, because it's always like, what am I doing? This goes back to purpose too. Is what I'm doing matter? Like, does it matter?
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, actually, it's the only thing that matters, like on my path anyway. And I was talking to this other woman that works with me, and I was like, I am so clear that the work of individual embodiment, sovereignty, and the practicing of being here in integrating our soul energy and being in service to a higher calling is literally the only thing that matters in the course of humanity. Because if enough people do that, the things that need to change will change. You don't fix them by trying to fix them. You fix them by becoming something else. Right? You know what I mean? And so I think this is getting out of the doing. So think about people who come to become a healer. They're like, I don't like all this pain in the world. I don't like that people are suffering. I want to help them. But by taking that mentality, right, you kind of make the people broken. The alternative mentality is, I want to serve the highest good in all beings, and therefore I want to work on them in order to serve that soul divinity that's in these people. And if you feel the energy of the two, you can feel the real difference.
Yeah. And working with people that come into Theta Healing to learn these skills of becoming a healer, a lot of the times it's that Mack truck that gets them to take the, you know, the leap. They feel lost. They feel miserable in their life or career, or completely unseen in their relationship, or having a health crisis. And I know I was there. I was in lost health crises, depression, when I came and discovered this modality. And honestly, even after that now, whenever I do take little breaks from like doing work, you know, the pandemic happened, I stopped teachings, and I got grumpy and miserable and a little depressed.
You have too much energy moving through you to stop and do nothing. It'll just fester. It's like a rotting peach. Like, it's like a fat peach rotting on the floor. Like, nobody ate it.
Well, my soul wants to teach. My soul wants to
totally
hold the field. And
of course,
you know, that's the thing that I think people really need to hear is that, you know, when you are actually active in the sense of purpose, when you are feeding that side and prioritizing it over all this other crap,
you thrive.
You thrive. You thrive. Listen,
there is nothing that's been more healing to me than teaching, because I'm in the field and the energy, like, I'm open, right? I'm more open than I am, like, in my regular day going to get my morning coffee, right? And it's like, I'm so open that the energy can actually move through me. And that's the thing that heals.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, I mean, I think people learning to say yes to that is the key, right? And I think that people are more afraid. There's always that saying of, like, people are more afraid of their power than they are of, like, not being successful. They're afraid of being successful. And it's not even just the successful. It's that when you are initiated by that level of power, and when I say power, I mean energy. When you are initiated by that level of power comes equal amounts of responsibility. And I think there are a lot of people who are like, I'd love to do that, but I don't want all the things that come with it. You know, I don't want to have to hold that. And look, I mean, as a woman who works in feminine embodiment sexuality with big energy, like, this is the energy that has been demonized for thousands of years. It's a responsibility to hold it because of what comes with it. Like, it's not all fucking roses and shit.
Mm.
You know, the demonization is big. And in fact, I was watching, this is total sideline. Can I go there?
Yeah.
So my teacher, who has also been demonized, told me about this documentary called The Disappearance of Cher Height. Okay. And I was like, who is this woman? I've never heard of this. So I start watching this documentary. She was a feminist in the 1970s. And she basically wrote a survey to women about masturbation and orgasm. And all of these women filled it out in essay form, like, very vulnerable, and, like, sent it back to her. And she compiled it and wrote a book called The Height Report. The Height Report is the 30th best-selling book of all time about female pleasure, orgasm, all of this stuff. I teach pussy stroking, and I had never heard of this woman. And the documentary was literally called The Disappearance of. She continued, and they demonized her in such a way that she literally made herself disappear. And then the United States never published another one of her books. Because what she showed and revealed was that about 70% of women do not climax from penetrative sex, and that it was mostly clitoral, and it fucked people up in such a way that it, like, shook society to learn this information. And they all tried to discredit her and disprove her and tell her that her methods weren't right. And men were, like, up in arms about this because they took it as, like, a personal blow and all of this. And I was like, they literally made her disappear. There has been so much that has been buried and lost about the feminine and embodiment. And by the way, this does affect men too, because women are the portal. The pussy is the portal to this dimension. And it's like, when you shut that down and you make it a mystery and you, like, make it wrong and you make it bad, everyone suffers. Everyone. I mean, look at what we've done to the birth industry.
Yeah.
Where women are afraid of giving birth in their own bodies. And it's become this dangerous, painful thing that, like, people need, you know. And listen, I had a C-section. So it's not like I'm saying modern medical interventions aren't great, but, like, what were the things that actually led to that? You know what I'm saying? And part of that is our disconnection from our own bodies. And so I'm sharing this because,
thank God these medical things are there, you know, as possibilities, but it becomes this slippery slope, you know, and not having that real education and, as you're saying it, you know, connection into your body without having the sense of embodiment and relationship with that element of pleasure in that area
Well, it's not even just pleasure.
It does become a mystery for everybody, you know, into birth.
I mean, look, the tack I take is like, I don't teach pussy from the perspective of pleasure, right? I teach it from the perspective of having mastery over the energetics of the embodiment, like where you can hold energy in your body, right? And that it also is a facilitator of the burning off of the ego, right? Like that you get your system so hot and present, right? That the mind literally like fucking melts off. And that's been my experience with it, right? I mean, look, you know me from before my whole path. And like, I know, you know, like you could always see me, but it's a revolutionary thing what the power of that can do. It's life altering.
Yeah.
Everyone's purpose should be pussy. Just kidding. You're like, I don't know. That's a little edgy, Harry.
But I don't have one.
You serve the pussy, whether it's yours.
Yes.
Or right. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I am surrounded by women, so I am always in service.
Well, and it's not even just pussy, right?
But
it's to the opening of the feminine.
Yeah.
It's in service to the feminine, the ability.
For males, I'm curious what you find is helpful for them to connect to their personal feminine.
It's a good question. I think, well, orgasmic meditation, first of all, I think is a great practice for men. And that's the lineage that I come from, because it is a pussy related practice focused on, like, it's pussy stroking, but it's partnered, right? Whereas my modality, sex bomb, is solo and does not include men. But I do have men in my work, in my space. And for them, I think it's two things. It's like breath work, I think, is very helpful. But in doing breath work and like connecting it, like from a Kegel perspective, like making sure that it gets all the way down to root, right? But then also being able to receive the feminine. And so it's interesting, because a lot of people will say that men don't receive. And I'm like, men absolutely fucking receive. They need to eat. They need, like, and so I kind of divide reception into like, can you receive the masculine or can you receive the feminine? And receiving the masculine is like, can you accept life's hard penetration? Can you accept the strokes that life gives you? And people actually are a lot better at receiving life's penetration, I'll be honest. This is like the punishing thing that a lot of people carry, which is like, okay, I hear you, I'll listen, right? Like that Mack truck level kind of like, you know, sit down and do it, right? Versus the feminine reception is so much harder for people. It's been harder for me as well, because I have all like mother line wounding. And it is like, it's literally like the path of like mother's milk, right? So it's literally like, can you receive from the feminine? And what is your relationship with the feminine in that way? So like, if you have mother issues, right, you're going to have a harder time receiving from the feminine. You're going to have a hard time receiving nourishment, feeding yourself, slowing down, receiving gentleness, like receiving,
yeah,
you know, in from that open way, whereas people really prefer a good forceful crack, you know? And so for men, I think it's slowing down. It's getting more in touch with breath. I think it's definitely a relationship with nourishment, like actual like food, and also really receiving love. Right? Like really receiving like nourishing love.
Yeah. That nurturing.
That nurturing.
It is a constant. It's like, but it's that whisper. It's like always present, but it's soft. You really do have to slow down to listen to it.
And the problem is that a lot of our culture has decided that, you know, that being masculine means that you can't receive that. But that's why men are lonely and men are, oh, that's the other thing. She wrote this book on masculine sexuality afterwards. And she had like 7,500 responses, which is enormous for a market survey. And the main theme was that men felt disconnected and lonely. And, you know, they're providing, but they're also kind of walled off. And then the woman is trying to take care of him. This is obviously in the 70s, right? But it's like there's a disconnect. And by the way, anybody who doesn't, you know, identify with this binary, what I would say is just tap into the energetics of a penetrative versus receptive energy, and you can kind of make this lesson your own.
Yeah. The profile for prostate cancer is that. So I've worked with a lot of people with a lot of different prostate issues, and the subconscious programs, beliefs, and emotions create these patterns in their life where they'll have the family, they'll be of service for the family in the way of providing, and they're always trying to provide and make everybody happy so that they can have space for their own personal, you know, pleasure that is separate. And there's like this separation, like, oh, just let me watch my football game. You know, like I worked all week to provide everything and now I'm going to be happy being away from all the people I just took care of, you know, instead of enjoying with them. And these patterns and emotions create...
It's not a regenerative cycle.
Yeah, that create all these prostate problems. So it's fascinating that you bring that up, you know, and this balance between it.
Well, and look at it. So it's like, it's so amazing because, you know, you look at that, which is like, you know, the energetic feeds into the physical, right? And the different energetics precede the physical. And then it's fascinating that it's literally focused on, you know, the male genitalia and organs.
Yeah.
It's almost like a resistance to providing.
It is. It is.
Or like a resistance.
It goes back to what you were saying before of the sense of service.
Yeah.
Can we be authentic in service in the way that is fulfilling?
But I also think what happens in a lot of that is that, and this is where women need to step up, right? I think a lot of feminism has kind of pointed the finger at men and the patriarchy and said, it's your fault and you need to fix it. And I take a different tack with that, which is that I work on really the women that work with me learn how to mature the feminine within them to a place where, because, and people are not going to like this either, but energetically, the feminine is the call and the masculine is the response. So if we're just talking about men and women, when a woman walks into a room in the energetic of being a helpless damsel, she is going to solicit a kind of response from men. And a lot of women have gotten used to this and they like this. They like this kind of attention. It's got daddy quality to it. Like, oh, he's going to take care of me. And like, oh, I'm just so helpless. And, you know, and it's got this young feminine energetic. Whereas like a mature feminine energetic has like a much more queen-like energy and it pulls in a different, like it makes a man like erect in his stance of like meeting her. And this is different than a woman taking on a powerful masculine energy. It's the powerful, well-held energy internally that allows a woman to open because she can hold herself and then a man can enter her energy field in a way that is also asking him to be at his best. And I experience this with my husband all the time because it's like when I'm shitty or if I'm like collapsed or in that kind of damsel mode, like my husband reflects that back to me. But when I'm in like service mode and I have to like get up and like do something for like my work or whatever, he is like, and he is on and he is like assist and he makes it possible and he handles like so many things. He is not a servant. We are a team, yeah, in that way, right? And so we reflect to one another whether we're at our highest potential operating system. And I believe that if we really want to adjust society back, and I'm talking thousands and thousands of years back to a place where women held themselves well, women need to learn to have this inner infrastructure where they are fully responsible for and in approval of their power, and their power is on and it is open, and it is not masculine power. It is fully lit pussy power. And I fucking hate that word. So please, I didn't just use that. Okay. But it's like, I want to try and like explain it to people, but it's like a fully open system that is self-contained in an open way that has no problem nourishing those around her.
Yeah.
That is how we wake up the world.
Absolutely. That is just beautiful. We are Mythic Life, free thinkers, deep feelers, courageous trailblazers. We own our myth with our vibes, how we think, feel, and act. We believe that love is a given, not something earned, that spiritual is sexy, kindness is cool, and earth is sacred, that everybody has superpowers and life is too boring without magic. We walk our talk, and when life gets real, we heal. We choose our path and we make it epic. And I just absolutely appreciate you so much, Perry, and thank you for coming on today.
Love you.
Your containers are just so powerful, and watching the people that come through them and meeting them has been phenomenal. Like watching the discovery and strength and power come through these people is just so powerful. Your work is incredible. And
thank you.
You know, all the listeners out there, for more on Perry Chase, you can visit her website, perrychase.com.
Instagram, Perry_Chase.
Perry_Chase. And for more on Mythic Life, check us out, mythiclife.com. We have some incredible free events coming up that you might be interested in. And this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. And I'm sorry it took so long for us to get it on the calendar, but I trust the divine timing of it. And I'm grateful to spend this time with you.
Absolutely.